Okay, we continue in Sefer Shoftim. We're in Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. We now join Shimshon as he has gone to Aza. He finds a woman who's a zona, and he's with her. He himself spreads the word to the Azite people that Shimshon is there. So they wait for him, and they lay a siege around the city, so when he comes to get out through the gates of the city, they'll be able to catch him at morning. However, Shimshon has some other ideas. And in Pasuk Gimel, let's see what he does. Vayishkav Shimshon ad chatzi halayla. Shimshon only sleeps until the middle of the night. He doesn't sleep the entire night. Vayakam b'chatzi halayla, and he gets up at the middle of the night. Vayechoz b'dalso shar ha'ir. He grabs onto the doors of the gate of the city, u'bishtei mezuzos, and to the two posts. Vayisa'eim im habriach, and he causes them to move with the briach, the bolt. Vayasam al seifav, and put them on his shoulders. Vayaleim el rosh ahor, and he took them up to the top of the mountain asher al pnei chevron, which is before chevron. So Malbim explains to show how much strength he had. He could have, on the one hand, just broke down the door. Could just bolted, just smashed the front door down and finished. But instead of that, he carries the whole door on his shoulders. And this, it's a gate of a city. It's not like this door. It's a huge door. And he raised them, up, and Vayas'eim says, implies that it was very easy for him. In other words, as he was traveling, as he was walking, it went along with him, as opposed to like excessive strength he had to show to get it off. As we'll see later on, this word comes back again. But clearly it's showing that it was very easy for him to do this. So, it was a tremendous, again, show of his strength. Now again, he left early. They figured if the guy was going for, unholy purposes, he would sleep the whole night. But this was all part of his plan, to show his strength again. And of course, he times his blow for midnight, which we know in Jewish history, midnight is a very special time. It's when Hashem struck down the Egyptians. It's a time for miracles throughout Jewish history. And so therefore, it's also interesting to note that the Torah does not say that the spirit of Hashem succeeded in him. It doesn't say Vatitzlach Ruach Hashem for him. He didn't need that special Ruach HaKodesh to do that great feat of strength, as we've seen in the past parts of this story. So we could say that even without the special manifestation of Ruach HaKodesh, Hashem was always with Shimshon, providing him with supernatural strength. As we'll see later on in this parak, where Shimshon says, hints to this idea as well, as we'll see later on. So it comes out like this. So was he really strong? Was he not really strong? So you really could say that he was maybe stronger than other people, and he still had a certain degree of strength, and was able to accomplish certain, activities. We know that when Shimshon, after he was blinded by the Philistines, and he didn't have the spirit of Hashem, he still had to turn the mill for the Philistines, which took a certain amount of strength. And the Rambam says, for example, when you give a man lashes, when a Bezin decides to strike a person with 40 lashes, it says, you don't give him more than 40 lashes, even if he's as strong as Shimshon. Now this can't be Shimshon, the Shimshon that when Hashem is giving him the spirit of holiness. Has to be when Shimshon's regular Shimshon. So why are we using him as the example? Must see, he was a very strong person as well. So, there's strength and there's strength. The ability to lift up the gates and transport them on his shoulders from Gaza to Hebron is a distance of 40 miles. So this is certainly a tremendous amount of strength. Is this within the human realm of strength? I don't know. To me, it seems a little bit more than the regular human amount of strength. No matter how strong a muscle builder is, I don't know if they could take the gates of a city 40 miles up a hill. So obviously there was a tremendous amount of strength here. It maybe came through his tefillos to Hashem. Maybe there's an in-between layer between his normal great strength and the miraculous godly strength. Maybe there's a level in between. It's not clear. But one thing's for sure, the Philistines knew that Shimshon was still around. Shimshon was very strong. So in case they want to do something to the Jews again, they know that he's still around. And he's now setting himself up and getting ready for his next mission that he has to do. So let's move on to Pasuk Dalet. Now here's a lot of debate exactly what happens in Pasuk Dalet. Vayiach Rechein was after this. This is the first time we see this next word being used. Vayehav Isha Benachal Sorek. And he loved a woman who was from the valley of Sorek. Ushma Delilah. And her name was Delilah. Okay, so there's a lot over here. First issue is, and he's with her, right? The next pasuk already tells us how the plishtim go to Delilah and try to get her to find out his secret of his strength. So obviously, in this one pasuk, there's a lot in this pasuk. I mean, he's with this woman. He's obviously married to this woman. He's something with this woman. He's got a big relationship with this woman. Well, it's only one pasuk telling us about this, so it leaves the commentaries having to work a little harder to figure out what is in this one pasuk. There's a lot of hints in this pasuk. You know, he didn't know her till pasuk Dalet. One pasuk of knowing her, and pasuk Hey, already the police didn't know that these two are together, and they already have all kinds of, they're telling her what to do with it. So there is, I don't know how long this relationship lasted, but obviously it was a strong relationship. So let's see what the commentators have to say over here. So first of all, the Malbim says on the words, why does it have to connect it to the story before? It was after this. So he says, Avera Gorera Savera. One sin leads to another sin. Because he feels that when he went to Aza to lie with this Zona, it was an Avera. Okay, again, we're trying to know, is it Avera Lishma? Is it Avera for the sake of God's name? Etc., etc. Remember, he is walking a tightrope. He's trying to be involved with the immoral people. He has to act like the immoral people. He has to do the immoral actions, but is his heart really into the immoral actions? Is he doing it totally for the sake of Hashem? This reminds you a lot of what other story, like you mentioned, Yoel. Yoel with Sisera, according to Chazal, that she allowed herself to be with him 7 times, obviously, but it was only one purpose, to kill him. Finished. And that showed you how great her level was, that even while doing an Avera, she was only thinking of Hashem. So on the one hand, we could say, and she was greatly praised, and there's no questions about her integrity. So this could be the same thing. He's trying, you know, it's great integrity. You know, the only problem is, how does it end? With Yoel, it ended differently. So you got to realize, we'll see. We'll see how, but he says, Avera Gerera Avera. Now, on the words, Ushma Delila, so the Malbim says, and here's a great debate here, he says, the first one he converted and changed her name for the sake of Yiddishkeit. But here, although we don't know the first one's name, but here he suggests she did not convert and she remained the Delilah that she was. And that's not an empirical proof. The fact that it doesn't, I mean, he just says because her name was Delilah. We already learned, in the alternative class a couple weeks ago about Yisro, that Yisro's original name was Yeser. That was his original name. That's basically what his name remained even after he converted. And we went through a whole Shem Yishmuel that discussed how the nature he had as a goy was the nature he was meant to develop, even as a Jew. So the fact that her name was Lila, I wouldn't say is an empirical proof that she didn't convert. We don't know. And he brings a Yerushalmi, that says that what happened in Timnah with the first wife was Derech Nesuin, was in the way of marriage, but not in Aza. And there also is another interesting thing, her name, Delilah. Delilah. What is Delilah? It comes from the word Dal. Dal means poor. So Chazal say it was telling us what eventually would come out of her. Delilah from Dildalah, Kocho Umasa Valibo. She weakened his heart, his actions, and his strength. So obviously she was ultimately no good for him. Okay, so Malbim looks at her very negatively, totally negatively, that she wasn't converted. Mamish, nothing to write home about. The Ralbag says that she did convert. He says v'yidma shigira tchila. It seems that he converted first, as our rabbis and Yerushalmi say. So he quotes a different chazal. It's interesting. They're referencing the same chazal. It's a Yerushalmi. I'd have to look it up. It's interesting. In other words, Yerushalmi says Yerushalmi says the one in Timna he did convert. Doesn't talk about the other one. This one. So I guess the Malam is learning, oh, didn't say the other one was converted. Ralbag says, well, looks like the first one was converted, this one was converted. So you got different opinions as to whether she converted or not converted. So what's going on over here? So let's start over here and then we'll go over here. There's stuff all over the place here. So Chazal is saying it was after this first act. So obviously he is going into decline. The truth is he may not realize it, but he is going into a decline, as he went previous into a decline, but got out of it. But he's going into a decline that he doesn't get out of it. He is, he obviously, after he ripped off those gates, he had to go into hiding, and he was on the way of losing his Nazirus. And this is the second time that Shimshon had seemed to go after his eyes. Although the Torah doesn't say he went after his eyes, but it seems that he's going after his eyes again. And he was unable to use his eyes properly to really see what kind of woman this Delilah was. In other words, it was, we'll see, she must have been a pretty good woman, but couldn't see the depths of what he was going to get out of her, as much as saw the other woman. The other woman was a whole different story. He just married her to make it as a shtick to kill as many Philistines as possible. And he really succeeded, by and large, in that area. Here, first of all, you have this expression of loving her, which we'll have to get back to shortly, which is a different expression altogether. So, and again, he should have chopped by her name, Delilah. Some of the Forshim say, if you knew her name was Delilah, think about what her name means. As we have stories in the Talmud, Reb Meir was an expert by sizing up people by looking at their names. And he once was at an inn, and the guy's name was Kidor. And Kidor, if you understand names, it means someone you shouldn't trust. So when Kidor offered to hold on to his money and watch for him, he refused, while others gave it to him, and they all lost their money. So sometimes when you hear a guy's name, the Marsha says that Shimshon should realize that her name was, you know, impoverished, something with dalut, would suggest there could be problems. So the real question is, what did he see in Delilah? And why did he marry her? And again, it doesn't seem that it's related to his guerrilla warfare and tactics, as he was doing with the first wife. Because indeed, the first wife does not say he loved her, just as she's straight in my eyes. She's straight to do what I need to do. But here the Torah records that he loves her. Now, I'm going to think this is romance. It's hard to say it was romance, because how old do you think Shimshon is by now? Right? Shimshon is at least in his 60s. Okay, he's an older man. Because number one, no one is a shofet unless they're 40 years old. Right? He's been a shofet for 20 years. So he's at least in his 60s. And if you go through a lot of, I don't want to bore you with the details exactly when he was born, before which shofet, another shvatim, he was an older man. And more importantly, so what attracted him to her? Would you say it's her beauty? Hard to say that. Why? Because the pasuk doesn't say anything about her. Normally, if a woman is beautiful, the Torah tells us she's beautiful. You have it many times. You have it by Rivka. The Torah says she was fair to look upon. Right. You find when Yaakov meets Rachel, she was beautiful to look upon. You see in Bathsheba, when David married her, she was very good looking. So it doesn't mention that Delilah had any beauty. So obviously, if it doesn't mention it, then her beauty was not a factor in the love for her. Also, you have to understand what word is used. Ahav is used instead of what other word could be used? Well, that's chafetz. Chafetz. which means I want her. Which it could have said, you know, this is a person that I want. He wanted her. And Rav Hirsch explains the difference between ahav and chafetz. Ahav, as we said, comes from the expression to give. Ahav is always a reference to pure love, where you want to give. Chafetz is referring to one's physical infatuation. So whenever we talk about our relation with Hashem, it's always to love. Vahavta Hashem Elokecha. Vahavta Re'echa Kamocha. Hashem described Yitzchak to Avram as the son whom you love. Yaakov loved Rachel, was understood in a spiritual sense beyond the physical. So the fact that we're using the word Vayehav is also a expression that it was a true kind of love that he wanted to give to her. So it must have been a spiritual kind of love. It wasn't a lusting kind of love. Furthermore, I already gave you a rule. Whenever it says about a person, and it says the person's name was, or and so-and-so was their name. We brought the Chazal, says there's a difference between that two. Right? We say, if the person ushemo blank, it means the person was a tzaddik, and their name led them to becoming this person. That we've already mentioned this before. If it says, and so-and-so shemo, and so-and-so is his name, meaning he was so-and-so, but now he descended down. That's the pattern the Medrash we already quoted uses. So what's the formula here? Her name was Delilah. That means she was good. She was good. Her name was Delilah, right? It was by Manoach. Remember? Ushmo Manoach. His father's name was Manoach. That means he was a tzaddik. And now it says Ushma Delilah. Her name was Delilah. Right? So obviously, she had to be on some kind of level. It's interesting that when the Medrash talks about this, it says, and sometimes, it'll say the person's name was X, and sometimes they're a Rasha and gives examples, and they don't give Delilah as an example of that. So obviously, she is not a Rasha. So when it says that Shimshon loved, right, it says he loved a woman, and her name was Delilah. Obviously, he loved her because she was a righteous woman, and she had spiritual qualities. So, so now you gotta think for a minute. She must have had, pretty good spiritual qualities. Because number one, why was she willing to marry Shimshon? Was she not aware that he was a fugitive? Didn't she remember that his first wife was burnt alive? Right? So where does she come to marry this guy? Okay, again, the text is very scarce. It doesn't tell us anything about her. So some of Forshim, the Reb Tzadok, says very interestingly that Delilah was Jewish by birth and therefore didn't need any conversion. The fact that no conversion was mentioned by Chazal doesn't mean to say he did not convert her, says that she was always Jewish. Interesting. And as we've mentioned, others said that she converted to Yiddishkeit. So she was willing to be, so that means she becomes a traitor to the Jewish people. So either way, he was always in danger. And we know that when you're in danger, your spouse is very much in danger, which was the case of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's wife. So interesting. I could skip the Rambam. So even though her name was Delilah and ultimately Dildalo Kochel Machshavto Maisav, she impoverished his actions, his heart, and his strength. But that can only be at the end. And in fact, you know, it could be the opposite. In other words, she started out, she didn't start off bad. It means that's what ultimately became of her. And the fact that he loved her is saying that, you know what? What we can learn from her is maybe she was a very good person. But sometimes the Torah shows you how great is the power of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara, you know, taking a bad person down is one thing. But taking down two good people, now that really shows you what the Yetzer can do. So it would seem that Shimshon, you know, he had a genuine love for her. She must have had certain outstanding spiritual qualities that made him worthy of his love. According to Rav Tzadok, she was a Jewish person. You know, and that wouldn't be unusual, you know, to say that, you know, a Philistine maybe raped a Jewish woman and then there was a Jewish child that came out of this. It's not improbable that such a thing could not have happened. The Philistines were very immoral people, so you could have some Jews amongst them. And it could be he found someone who had, you know, the proper qualities that would be worthy of his love. But certainly she didn't have much staying power, as is evident in the story. And he does begin the slippery slope. Now, Reb Tzadok says something else very, say, really, be worth it one day to go. Reb Tzadok has pages and pages and pages on this in his work, Yisrael Kedoshim. So Reb Tzadok says that since, remember, as we've said all along, Mashiach had the potential of being the Mashiach. Yaakov had the prophecy to know that he had all the potential of being the Mashiach. So Mashiach has to rectify the sin of Adam HaRishon. So first of all, if you have to rectify the sin of Adam HaRishon, so what has to be your marital status? He has to be married. Adam HaRishon had a chava, had a wife, so the Mashiach has to be married to somebody. Can't be someone who's not married. I don't know if it has to be one woman only, but whatever. Has to be married. But you have to have a chava. You have to have a chava. So, which he loved. And he married her for this purpose. Alright? So it's interesting. It doesn't say he just married her. It doesn't even say he married her. It just say that he loved her. So obviously the issue over here was that he couldn't distinguish between when the love should be restrained or should be involved in full force. And Reb Tzadok mentions that Delilah also comes, we're dildel. It's an expression of an aver meduldal. It could be sometimes an animal has a body part that's like dangling. Sometimes, usually your body part is part of your body and it functions properly. Sometimes it could be dislocated or whatever, and it's an aver meduldal. Just a hanging, dangling piece of flesh that really needs to get reconnected to the source. So, Shimshon felt that he took a woman who needed to get reconnected. And just like Chava, ultimately, what was Chava's problem? She took women away from their high level, and for whatever, however you want to explain her chait. So his job was to restore womankind back to the way it should be. So he figures he'll take a Philistine woman. Notwithstanding if she really was Jewish or she wasn't Jewish or converted, not converted, she was from amongst the Philistines. And obviously she had a certain Philistine lifestyle. But I guess he felt there was what to work with and to develop her into being a proper woman. And this would be the tikkun of Chava. This would be a correction of Chava. That was the plan. Because everything in this world has to have some kind of purpose. There's nothing in this world that doesn't have a purpose. So even a woman who comes from an area of the Philistines, there must be a purpose in her life too. And I will take her and I will love her. I will give to her and I will build her up and make her into a better person. I guess he felt she had the potential to become a better person. So that's why he was giving his love to her in order. And as we've learned many times, this beautiful idea from the Das Asvacha Sefer, which is going to come up in this parsha as well in Truma, is, that the more you give, the more spiritual you develop. Remember, the whole idea is, are you a giver or are you a taker? The neshama is a giver. The body is a taker. Clear, right? And therefore, to the degree that you associate yourself as a giver, to that degree, you are associating with your neshama. And as we've said, the natural state of humanity is to cling together. And what is it that separates people? Just like two magnets, you're supposed to be together. All people are really meant to live together in peace. That's what Hashem made us. That's what gave us neshamas. So why are we not together? We're not together just like a magnet. If you put a piece of wood in between the two magnets, there's a barrier that doesn't let them connect. So you put a barrier in between, and the barrier in between is the desire to take. That is the barrier that is created. And most human beings are takers and not givers, because most human beings identify with their bodies. Even when they give, many times it's giving in order to take. So the question, the bottom line is that one has to be an ultimate giver. It's the ultimate giver. So obviously, to bring us back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for Mashiach to come, we all have to become givers. If we don't become givers, Mashiach ain't coming. That's all there is to it. If we're going to be in a state where we're all close to Hashem, it has to be a generation of givers. You can understand how amazing this Mashiach is going to be. Because we are in the most selfish, narcissistic generation in the history of the world. in the history of the creation, maybe come to the capital to the Dor HaMavol. Okay, Dor HaMavol got wiped out, and really we should get wiped out. But Hashem promised He's not going to wipe us out anymore. We're so into our physical place, it's unbelievable. Can you imagine what the Mashiach is going to have to pull off? So Shimshon, being a potential Mashiach, he has to give. Okay, now where'd be the hardest part to give? Who'd be the hardest person to give? To give to a Philistine? You know, you have to be really careful over here. You have to be really, you're walking a tightrope. You know, Yitzhak Rabin felt that you give to the Arabs and see what happened over there. Didn't quite work out the way he had planned. Right? So you have to be awfully careful who you give to. But his feeling was, I will love her. Genuine love. I will give. I will give. I will give. It will break down the barriers between us and the Philistines. It's a very altruistic thought. So if Yitzhak Rabin would have known his Tanakh, he'd see right from here that it ain't going to ever happen. Or not in this way. Not in this way. Right? And he loved her. It was genuine love. In other words, I'm loving her to give to her, to break the barriers, and that will ultimately be a role model for her. And that could bring the Mashiach. And that's how we bring this Aver Medoldal, this dangling, apparently extraneous body part will be reconnected. I'll reconnect the whole world. But he wasn't so, his perspective got a bit beclouded. And unfortunately, it did not work out the way he intended. But these are certainly the thoughts that were in his mind. It wasn't Stam, a guy looking for lust. In other words, he's trying to take all the lust that the Plishtim... Remember, the Plishtim were into lust, so they were into giving. Remember, lust is the distortion of chesed. It means there is chesed there. There is chesed, but it's distorted in the worst way. But you have with whom what to work with, if you know how to undistort the chesed. So maybe he's trying it out on her. Let her be the first one. Whatever it is, he's trying to make this happen. He's trying to make some tikkunim in the world. So what happens does not work. And we'll see already. So in other words, this was a woman who we felt had the potential. She appeared to be, as a Philistine, she was righteous enough to marry. Let's try with her. So we're going to see, like, paralleling the Yetzirah she has to deal with, the Yetzirah he has to deal with. They both have Yetzirahs. And they both fail. We have to see how they fail. And, you know, people who have good... Obviously, if she married a guy like him, she could not have been rank-and-file Philistine. Couldn't have. He was public enemy number one. She must have seen something good in this guy. Right? He must have seen something good in her. So there's two people potentially good. Now, if that would work out good, then maybe we could have the beginning of the Mashiach from this. But, yes... The only one of the three women his wife to be named. It's a good observation. His mother's name is not mentioned overtly in this story. The first wife, we don't know ever what her name is. And the Zona we don't know, and her we know. So obviously there's more to draw from. There's more to draw from. Also, I don't know, nobody seems to pick up on the other word. Delilah is from Deli, which is a bucket. Right? That's the mazel of the month of Shvat. Right? Dali, the holy of a Dali, a bucket, is someone who is able to, a Dali, a bucket, that is the sign of that month. Right? And, the idea of the bucket is that the bucket has only one function. Only one function to draw from here and take over there. It keeps nothing for itself. So, you know, there's a lot in that name Dalila. There's a lot of positive aspects. She can be a bucket that we can draw forth from. She will, can also, a bucket is a giver, is an ultimate giver. A bucket doesn't hold anything for itself. It takes, look, what does a bucket do? You draw a bucket into the well, looks like a taker, right? Takes. But what's it taking for? To give to others. So she's a taker in order to give to others. So I will marry her, and she will be my Dali. And she will take from me and give on to others. That's one way of taking and giving on to others. Unfortunately, what she does do is she takes his secret and gives it on to others. In other words, he knew she had the ability to share whatever he would give to her. So he was hoping he would give her good. He would give her goodness. And then she would teach other women, you know what? You can take to give. Right? But instead of her being the Dali, she's Dildel. She weakens his strength. She saps some of his strength and gives that over to the Plishtim, which is also what a Dali could do. You could take a Dali could go over to the watering trough where the water's there already, take the water off, and throw it into the ground. Can also do that. Can also do that. Can destroy with that. But it's generally not meant to destroy. Yeah?
He loved her. Did you love him?
Doesn't say. Doesn't say anything. Doesn't say. You're right.
Love
should. But on the other hand, you can also bring out other, you can bring love. You can bring people to love you.
Doesn't say you, Rivka loved Yitzchak. It said Yitzchak.
Right? Right? Doesn't say Rachel loved Yaakov. Right? But obviously they did. Obviously they did. So again, and usually the love usually has to start with the husband. Anyway. For the real love to happen, the husband is more of the potential to initially to give the love. So if the husband gives, then the wife reciprocates. So you can understand where the plans were coming from it and where he certainly had good intentions. But now we get, so now who has, now this is like unbelievable. So what happens to the sin of Rishon? Who falls first? The wife falls first. So it's going to be the same thing over here. The wife falls first. So far, you can't say he did anything terrible yet. He really, you can't nail, if you're going with the idea that he's doing everything for the sake of Hashem and he's all this immoral things, it's like Yael, it's for a greater purpose. See, now after Pascha, Beis, and Gimel, he's made himself the ultimate fugitive, right? So anyone who wants to marry him has to be L'Shem Shemaim to marry him, right? That's what Pascha, Beis, and Gimel are saying. He now has them. It's been 20 years. Okay, maybe you forget a little bit, whatever. Now, can you imagine, Lahav, the low Aleinu, Osama bin Laden. Let's say he'll be low for 20 years. He's already been low for almost 10 years. Right? So, you begin to start forgetting how terrible he is. A lot of people are beginning to forget about it. Right? So, imagine, let's say another 10 years will pass. It'll be, almost be like a distant thing. And then, boom, another, God forbid, another incident. Then it kind of, oh, remember how terrible he was. So Shimshon wants him good and well to remember what he was from 20 years ago. So what he went and knocked down the walls and went to a zone and he's making trouble. And right then he's marrying another woman. So she has to have some morality to her. Why would she want public enemy number one revisited? So he really feels that there is an opportunity here. And it appears that she may be his Chava. So just like the snake, right, goes to Chava, so the snake's gonna come to Delilah. But the snake obviously is gonna have a little different form. Pasuk Hey. Vayalu Eleha Sarne Plishtim. So the noblemen of the Plishtim come up to her. Vayomrla and say to her, Pati also, seduce him. Uri'i, and see the following two things. We want to know two pieces of information. Number one, is the way the Malbim explains, what is his power so great? What's the origin of his power? And more importantly, number two, and how we'll be able to overpower him. And to tie him up to afflict him. You know, what can we do to control this power? And each one of us, each one, and I think there was five Sarnei Plishtim, I think there were five main Philistine cities, which give you an interesting number. Elaf Umea Kasaf, 1,100 silver coins. That means each of us, five of them, 5,500, it must be an exorbitant amount of money. An exorbitant amount of money. This number, 1,100, will come back to haunt us when we're going to come to the story of Pesel Micha. Pesel Micha, the number 1,100 silver coins is used as well with the Pesel Micha. So the Malbim explains, number one, that, what's the source of his strength? Cause they thought, like, it wasn't just natural. It must have been some kind of school, or some kind of, you know, like, Popeye eats his spinach. You know, maybe he says the Shema Meforash. Maybe he does something. In other words, it couldn't believe a person just born that way, right? So we at least know what the source of the strength is, then we can figure out how to deal with it, A. And even if it, let's say, is a natural strength, there must be some way to subdue it. Right? Must be maybe he's strong in one area, but not, let's say, strong in his arms and not in his feet. There's got to be some way to subdue it. But what do they not say they're going to do to him?
Kill him.
They said they won't kill him.
No.
They said they won't kill him. They won't kill him. And the truth is they kept that promise. They didn't kill him. So, very interesting. So, you got to figure for a minute, why does she agree? You're going to see she's going to agree. It doesn't even say she agrees. She goes right into the next pasuk and she starts tormenting Shimshon for what she wants. So if she loved the guy, why did she agree? Okay, so there's a lot of things. So number one, the number 1100 is a very mystical number. Reb Tzadok says there are four digits. He says that we know there are four spiritual worlds. The highest world is the world of Atzilus. That's the world where it's all God and there's nothing else but Hashem. And then the next world is the world of Bria, where the manifestations of his powers begin to become revealed and exposed and come out from Hashem. Then the world of Yetzira, where it takes more of a shape in the Malachim who carry it out. And then the world of Asiya, the world down here, where it plays out and lives itself out. So he says that the single digits, a single digit refers to the world of Atzilus, a double digit refers to Bria, triple digit is Yetzira, and a fourth digit is Asiya. Now where can evil exist? Evil can exist in our world for sure, the world of Asiya. Can also be in the world of Yetzira. Because Rishayim can get a hold of the of names of Hashem and use them in a negative way to maybe be able to control Malachim, which are in the world of Yetzira. That's where Bilam and people like that get their powers, because they can get into the world of Yetzira, the world above us that can control this world. But you can't get any higher than that. That's why Jews ultimately ain't Mazal Yisrael. We can go all the way up to the top and be saved from that. But anyway, the two lower worlds are where evil can take place. So 1100 means there's a one and a one in the thousands column, in the hundreds column, but not in the tens column and not in the single column, because that's where the evil can be. The 1100, now the two lower worlds, you have the thousands column and the hundreds, further removed from the beginning, that's where the evil can be. So that's what that number symbolizes. And obviously, what did her in was the money. That money is the most powerful lust in the world. You know, there's different type of reinforcers. There's primary reinforcers and secondary reinforcers. Primary reinforcers are food and drink, things that have tangible benefits, immediate gratification. But what is the most effective reinforcer? It's secondary reinforcers, and specifically money. Money is the most powerful reinforcer, much more than primary reinforcers. Because on a simple level, why? Because you can do a lot of things with money. Right? Reb Tzadok says that money is the worst evil. It's worst evil, just like the nachash, just like the snake. He says, what do we know about the snake? The Gemara says, you know, when a snake bites, they ask the snake, what are you biting someone for? You don't even enjoy. The snake has no taste. You don't even enjoy what you bite. So what does the snake answer? He says, I want to know, why do people speak Lashon Hara? What benefit do you get from speaking Lashon Hara? You get make more money? When you talk about somebody negatively, what do you get out of it? You don't get any tangible benefit, not a primary benefit from it. So what's the message of that medrash? So Lashon Hara, really, what is it? It's the rush to tumah, to impurity, to engage in tumah, just for the sake of engaging in tumah. Doing an avera, you know, gives you a high, even though there's no real immediate gratification. There's no benefit. It's not logical. Speaking Lashon Hara, it's not logical. It really isn't logical. It's not like eating a steak. It's not like none of these things. But it's being bad to be bad. At the end of the day, what are you? You talked about somebody for half an hour. You spoke to another person, all the negative things about another person. Why? Kacha. It's bad to be bad. And he says, you could maybe differ a little, but he says, same thing with money. You know, wanting the money itself is nothing. Okay, now then you could take the money and do things with that. That's true. But the money itself is nothing. And he says that the desire for something that's so intangible is the worst evil. It's like evil for the sake of evil. And you can see this, for example, like people making, like a guy like Madoff. Okay? Like billions and billions. He was doing okay even before he was cheating. Before he was cheating, he was doing good. He was doing unbelievably good. I mean, so once you get to a certain number, you know, once you're in multi-millions, I mean, what can more money do for you already? You know, and still this idea of more and more and more, and how people are never satisfied with the amount of money, most people. What's this drive to have more money once, especially when you have enough? We're not talking a person who has no money, he's poor, he's impoverished, I need a couple bucks or I'm going to die. We're not talking about that. The amount of money they were giving her was like unbelievable. And what does she need money for? What does Dalila need money for? She's married to the strongest guy in the world. You ever going to want for anything? What is she going to need? He can always hunt a deer for her, have food, he can build a house, can defend her. What do you need money if you got such a guy? And must have been billions of dollars. So what are you going to get with the billions of dollars? Like, for example, a stingy person. You know, who was the recluse? Howard Hughes. Howard Hughes. He was the richest man in the world. He's a Michiganer. And he would eat candy bars. You know, was stingy, wouldn't give money. What are you doing it for? So what is it? Just to have it. And that's what it really means when we say money is the root of all evil. It means it's lusting for the sake of lusting. You're not even getting an immediate benefit. You know, you have certain very wealthy people. Interesting, certain very wealthy people. How chintzy they are. You know, that they want to get it on sale. And this, you know, you got millions of dollars. Go in the store, pay full price. No, it was on sale last week. I don't have any. You have people like this. You say, unbelievable. So some people say that's not how they got rich. Yeah. It's crazy. It's once you get to that point, it's for money itself. What?
Is it an illness?
Is it an illness? It could be a spiritual illness. That's another question. That's a good question. But clearly, this is what did her in. There's some more reasons. We're out of time now. We'll come back tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem, and take a little more detail.
I just find it interesting.